So as Donnie said, you know, we're going to, for lack of a better word, let's just call this like Testimony Sunday. We've had a lot of church. We've had a lot of meetings. And over the last while, there's also been a lot of new people that have come in, visited, hung around, not sure if they're like, yeah, is this my family? Is it not? And so this morning, it's a really nice opportunity if we can expose you to the church. Not the organization, not the NPO, not the this, the that, the church, the people, you know? And I think it's a beautiful time to see the hearts, the lives of one another, because we're all individuals, right? And so, Ramon, did you get my message about sharing this morning? I just wanted to check. Oh, you didn't? Okay. And so, before we do that, a testimony, in a sense, is a fact, personal experience about looking back, right? So let me just take a little bit of license here. If you're here with your spouse, fiancé, you've been married a while, you've been in a relationship a while, just quickly grab your partner's hand. Grab your partner's hand, right? This is not a time for the singles to make a move. I'm watching you. Leave room for the spirit, please. Grab you. And I want you to look at each other. And I want you to think of like a yonder memory, some memory that's like a core milestone, right? And then I want you to just give each other like a little wink. Just like a little wink. I'm seeing a lot of winks, like you guys argued in the car on the way to church. I'm seeing a lot of like, you know, I've been there. Listen, nothing builds faith like an argument in the car on the way to church. I tell you, it's amazing. But for some of you, you're in that relationship, you've got that. For some of you who, you've marked a memorial way of something different. Some of you have got tattoos. Some of you in this church have more tattoos than there is like ink in an HP printer. But James, Mike, it's amazing. Maybe some of you have this experience. Wherever you grew up in the beautiful hills of Durbanville and the parks, and you've gone and etched yours and your loved one's name at that point with your Toyota Cressida key in the blue gums, and there's a little heart, and it's got two initials. But you might not be married to the person with that letter there anymore. But maybe that's you. So times change, but people actually don't. And there's a sense of like, even in the Bible, we see there's plenty of times, and I'm going to use one reference, where you mark something that's categorical, that's a memory, that's a testimony of the Lord, right? Just quickly, I want to put up Joshua 4, I want to go from verse 8. And so, from verse 4. So quick context, Moses, desert, 40 years, dropping the ball, Joshua takes the baton, he's coming around the corner, final 100 meters, he's got the small problem of a puddle in the road called the Jordan River that they need to get to. They've got Pharaoh, the Egyptians chasing them, this massive thing, like how are we going to get through? And so it says this, so Joshua called together 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and he said to them, go over before the ark of the Lord into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. And then we see in verse 8, and so the Israelites did, and then I'm going to jump just to the end of verse 9, and it says, and they are still, the very last line, and they are there to this day. And the one thing that nobody can take away from you till the day you die, even beyond, is your testimony. How many of you have had a loved one passed away, but you still speak about something of their life? You still speak about, there's testimony in that. So even though you've gone, testimonies last forever. And so this morning, we're going to bring up three very different people, not for any reason, just because everybody has their own story. And the overarching theme in a testimony, I'm going to say Revelation 12:11. I'll end with this. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. They did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. And it speaks about in the end days, it was the blood of the Lamb and the word of the testimony. Another way of saying that in some translations, it speaks about the word of the gospel of what Jesus had done, who they were, what Jesus did, and then who they are. And so first and foremost, guys, I'd love to welcome up. Some of you don't know him. Those that do are super blessed. Those that don't, you're about to be super blessed, is Gerald the Danger Man Elliot. Where's that other one? Where's the real Danger Man? There's the Danger Man. Come up, Gerald. Come up. We love you.
Where'd you get those ones?
Oh, Facebook only had two photos of you, so I stole them from Facebook.
Hi there, guys. So, as Eric was saying, thanks for the weird welcome. I'm Gerald. I'm married to Tracy. We've have the privilege of being married 35 years. This young man, 35 years of marriage. But a lot of you would have got to know me in the Gerald now. I got saved at 16, so nearly 40 years ago. And most of you would have only got to know me in a redeemed state. And I'm still being redeemed. I'm still a sinner. I'm still got work on me. But I grew up in quite a hectic family. I often make jokes that I had the original Jerry Springer family. And for those of you who know the Jerry Springer show, it was quite gnarly. But I grew up rejected by my father from the age of 8. My parents got divorced. I chose to stay with my mother in the divorce as opposed to with my dad, and my siblings stayed with my dad. So my dad pretty much wrote me off at that point. And it sounds quite harsh, but I grew up with a father who wasn't very loving. And children for him in the divorce was winning the argument. It wasn't about love. It wasn't about, actually, I want my kids with me. It was more about getting at my mom. So that's kind of the beginning of it. At age 8, I packed my bags and I left home for the first time. At age 9, I had my first nervous breakdown. I actually was booked off school for recovery, lost my hair, started going blind, and that's all nerves. That's all trauma through the years. But it didn't stop there, it carried on. I lived a very rough life. I was exposed to clubs and bars by the age of 13. I did everything young in life because there was nothing at home. I looked for things outside of home. We grew up, my brothers and sisters treated me like the outcast in the family. Strange thing, at age 9, my mom got remarried, had twins, and I suddenly became a big brother. From the baby of the first family to the big brother. And now I stepped into a responsibility that wasn't mine. My stepdad wasn't a great stepdad either. He didn't really pay much attention to the children. And my mother having twins, I had to step in and help. So from the age of 9, I ended up helping raise twins. By the time I got to 16, I'd been in relationships with girls from 12, 13, intimately, and I made a girl pregnant at school. And as a result, my daughter is now 38 years old. I've got two grandchildren, two granddaughters from her. But the result of making a girl pregnant at school in Natal, who still thought a bit colonially I was expelled. And I wasn't allowed to go to school within a 300-kilometer radius. So I went to college, and I plugged out of college. I never finished anything in life. I didn't get my schooling. I didn't pull through on anything. The life we'd lived was one of when it gets tough, you run. And I think I can accredit that to just having major father heart wounds and major issues with fathers who I believed were just judges and disciplinarians. That's the only side I saw of them. So growing up, these are tears of joy, by the way. This is not... because I know that God has done an incredible work in me. But at 16, in a youth group in Impungeni, I bowed my knee. And I gave my life the first time, because there were a few along the journey. But I gave my life to the Lord. And something radically changed in me that I knew from that day that God was doing a work in me. But healing didn't come till much later in life. It didn't come till probably late into my 40s when I started to actually really heal from it. But I remember getting a phone call. I was probably about 36 or 37 when my stepfather phoned me. And part of his healing process was to ask for forgiveness. And that moment for me was actually profound, because I started to unpack with a good friend of mine, Lance, and I started to unpack with him some of these father wounds and these heart issues. And Lance actually walked me through a long road just of restoring what the father actually looks like. And I'm giving you just the tip of the iceberg here, because I could bore you with details for hours. I really could. At the age of 47, my father, my biological father, phones my stepbrother in PE, and he says, "I'm going to live with my daughter. There's nothing left for me in South Africa." And it was at that moment, at 47, I'm like, "Yo, is that the final dagger? Is that it?" But here's the thing. I've come to know a God that heals. And he wants to look at my heart. He wants to heal my heart. Now, I know from years and years of rejection. It's all I knew from both my dads was rejection. But I know that if I stayed on that trajectory, if I only lived by the grid of reference that I'd seen my dads do, there's no way I could love. There's no way I could see anything through. There's no way that I could have endured to the point where a lot of people in this church regard me as like the granddad. When I say I love children dearly, absolutely dearly. There are children, there are young adults in this room that I've rocked to sleep. And God has given us, both Tracy and I, given us just this absolute, resolute joy in loving people and loving children. And that is not me. I know that if it's up to me, I will rebel, I will run, and I won't take responsibility. Me as Gerald, but I know that Christ in me has shifted something that I would never have had before. I would never have had before. And it's only by His grace, only by Him coming and doing a work in me. There's absolutely no way. There's no way. We have the privilege, like I say, I have the privilege of having a daughter and two grandchildren, which are not Tracy's biological children. But here's an interesting thing, is that around about 15 years ago, 16 years ago, Tracy and I were praying about having children ourselves. And I felt the Lord say to me very clearly that we should not have children. And after he had given me such a love for children, it was like, Lord, what are you doing there? And we had gone through process of, yes, we want children. No, we don't want children. God rebuking us. But then God said to me, I want you to not have children of your own, like us as a couple. But would you be parents to other people's children? And there's been this a massive, massive shift in my heart that if my family unit was anything to go by, there's no way I should be able to land there. But God and his purposes and his identity, because in me I know that it wouldn't have been. So it is, it's all glory to God. It's only him that has come and changed me to be who I am today.
Thanks, man. So I just wanted to answer one or two questions, but maybe the kids guys want to we'll just give it a minute for the kids guys to go out and let them go quick. Kira, maybe you can just drop like those 8 questions up there. Gerald, 1-2 questions of those. Choose 2 and give us a very, very quick answer, okay?
Okay, so quickly, I'll choose 3. How has your relationship with God changed as a person? As I was just saying, I've had two fathers. I mentioned I never finished anything really in life until coming to the Lord. But I went to 9 schools. I changed schools 12 times. I come from a family of 9 children, so there were 4 original, two halves and 3 steps. So it really is a mixed-match family. But I never spent 2 Christmases in the same house growing up. My first 2 Christmases together were with Tracy. And it's just a little glimpse into how erratic life was and how we never got to anything. And yet, I stand here today, more than 20 years in this church, 35 years married. I've been employed full-time 7 or 8 years here. I couldn't hold down jobs before. When Tracy and I hit bad times, I packed my bags and I ran away. I ran away, guys. That was my norm, because that's how I was raised. But God's redeeming power. But what he's done in my heart, in my life, I can't be the same again. I know I can't.
Awesome. Thank you. I'll leave it there just with the one. Guys, thanks, Gerald. You're a star. So next, I'd love to welcome Rachel. Rachel, I want to be on a reality TV show, Harrington. There we go. Okay. Also a Facebook picture.
Hi guys. My name is Rachel. As you can see, okay, never mind. I'm married to Brad Harrington for almost 3 years now. I'm a ballet teacher, and yeah, I just want to share a bit of my story going back to when I was 5. So when I was 5, my parents got divorced, and it was, yeah, such a painful time of my life. I just felt so broken and alone and afraid. I just felt the pain of having my family be split apart. And yeah, my mom, she took custody of us, so we only saw my dad like every other weekend, but he also struggled with his mental health. So he had crippling anxiety and depression, and because of the meds he was on, like sometimes he was there, and when he was there, like he was interactive with us, and he was like doing fun things with us, taking us out and all of that, but then he would like, yeah, because of his mental health, he would have to like drop us. Like, I remember times of just like wanting to depend on him to be there, and he just wasn't because of, yeah, obviously the anxiety and depression that he was facing. Yeah, so in that painful time of my life, I do just want to really, yeah, proclaim that something came out of that, something so beautiful and something that no one can ever take away from me, and that is my relationship with the Lord. And it's something that's so important to me because, yeah, God found me when I really needed him, and I would, yeah, would love to share that part. Growing up with my dad not fully present, my Father in heaven really made his presence known to me at a very young age. And I just remember having times of experiencing his presence and just feeling just like this light, like this glimmer of hope that everything was going to be okay. And this wasn't it for me. Like, this wasn't my portion. And God had so much more for me. I just had to trust him. And I remember my mom and my sister, my mom and my gran, they would sit with me and they would pray for me and pray with me. And we would speak to Jesus about what was going on in my heart. And what I was feeling. And I remember my gran would share with me stories of like Jesus appearing to the woman at the well, the woman caught in adultery, just all these Bible stories, Lazarus being raised from the dead, like Jesus having that power to do that. And I was just in awe. I was like, what? Like, this is crazy. This stuff really happened. And the people who he revealed himself to and saved were people that were just ordinary people. They didn't live these perfect lives. They didn't have it all together. They were just broken people that needed the Lord. And I really related with that. And I saw how, because he could do it with them, he could do it with me. And I just experienced the person of Jesus, and I learned about the person of Jesus. And as I learned about him, I started to fall in love with him. Just him who is compassionate and merciful, full of grace and full of truth and sinless. And yeah, I was just blown away by the person of Jesus. He revealed himself to me here in this church building when I was 9. So my mom and my sister and I, we came to visit this church when I was 9 years old. And I remember sitting upstairs in the next gen class. And I don't know if anyone here will remember Nikki Brainstump. Yes. So he was teaching the class. And at the end of the lesson, he said, is there anyone here that would like to give their lives to the Lord and invite Jesus to live in their hearts? And I remember my heart was racing. I was so excited. And I just really felt the presence of the Lord so strongly on me. I put up my hand with boldness and with excitement. And that day I gave my life to him. And a couple of weeks later, I felt the Lord put it on my heart to get baptized. And some people were like, you know, like, she's so young, maybe, you know, wait a bit. But I had so much faith that I wanted, yeah, this is what the Lord wanted for me. And my mom was also so in tune with the Holy Spirit. She was like, yes, let's do it, like, next week. And I got baptized and filled with the Spirit at a young age. And my relationship with God has just been everything to me. And I've learned so much about him. What really drew me to him was how he is never going to leave and he never changes. God is the same today, tomorrow, yesterday, and forever. And just having that constant in my life, it was such a safe place for me. And I learned to hear his voice. We're speaking about the prophetic early in the announcements. And my mom, single mom, she would come to these meetings of the prophetic time, and I would just come with her because no babysitters, my gran is busy. So I would just come with her, and I actually took part in the, like, I would listen, and they would say like a time of praying for people, and I would go, and I just believed that I could, why not? Like, I could hear the voice of the Lord. And my gran also encouraged me how Paul told Timothy, don't let anyone despise you because of your young age. And I learned to hear the voice of the Lord, and it was also such a faith building because as soon as I would have, like, I would hear his voice, and then I would share that with someone. It actually built my faith when they responded, and they were like, wow, like, this is what the Lord is doing in my life. This is such a confirmation. And I started to recognize that voice from hearing the Lord for myself, but also hearing the Lord for other people. And hearing his voice also grew my relationship with him and just going to him for absolutely everything. I experienced God also as the Father. who provides. Living in a single parent household, I also lived in a single income household. So things were always really tight. We didn't grow up with a lot of money. And we really, like, we prayed and we relied on the Lord for a lot of financial provision in our lives. And I just, I can testify to so many times where He's provided everything that we needed and more because of His goodness. There were times where we didn't have food to eat and there would be a knock on the door and this lady was holding two groceries full of food and she said, I felt the Lord put on my heart to bless you with these groceries. And she didn't know anything. She didn't know how we were struggling. But the Lord put it on her heart and He provided for us. And those testimonies also built my faith, and just seeing His love and His just absolute grace on my life, not because I deserved it, but because I needed it. And looking at the time, we never went without, and still to this day, like being married to Brad, he is a commissioned earner, so he sells properties like warehouses, factories, all that stuff. And we even, like, still today, like, we're faithing it every month, and he has come through for us month after month. We've never gone without. We've always been able to pay our bills. He's been so faithful to us every year, always. Thank you, Lord. And in His presence, just feeling the joy and the peace, the love and the hope that I so craved. It was life-giving and it changed my life for the good. Yeah, that's me.
That's so cool. Okay, so same thing. Quick, choose one or two questions that that you'd love to answer out of there.
I'm going to go, I feel to go with number three. I know it's the same as Gerald, but I feel to go with number three. So I have struggled with anxiety for a lot of my life. You can ask my husband. The one time I made him rush me to the ER because I thought I was having a heart attack. My heart was just racing so fast. And for those who have ever experienced a panic attack will know what I'm talking about. We got there, I wasn't having a heart attack, and we got blood tests and all of that, and it turns out it was a panic attack. I have been prescribed anxiety medication from doctors before, but I felt in the Lord not to take them. I really struggle with anxiety and just catastrophizing thoughts of obsessing over the worst possible outcome. I really struggled with that, and it's basically your brain trying to protect you, but it actually makes you feel unsafe and unsettled and filled with these worrying thoughts of what if, and I really struggled with that. And I learned in my walk that the Lord didn't want me to worry. That wasn't the call that He had for me. And I read Philippians 4, where it speaks about, do not worry about anything, but pray about everything. Thank God for what you have and ask Him for what you need. And then it goes on to say about the thoughts, to fix your thoughts on things that are pure, lovely, and holy. And I realized that I was fixing my thoughts on the worst possible outcome, and I wasn't trusting God with the outcome. And in my relationship with Him, I just felt that He didn't want me to struggle with this anxiety and these worrying thoughts. He wanted me to live a life of freedom where I trust in Him and I place my worries in His hands and I leave it there. I don't still try to take it back again, which is what I was struggling with. And now, to this day, like, I still get those thoughts of worrying, but now I don't have to sit in that pit. Like, there's a way out for me where I can cast my anxieties onto Him. And you think of unbelievers, like, who do they have to trust in but themselves? And I think for me, having a Father who loves me, I can trust in Him. And it's so freeing and so powerful for me. And in everyday life, having those thoughts, giving it to Him and trusting Him with the outcome. Don't want to go too long.
That's cool. We'll leave it at one. Yeah. Thank you so much. You're an absolute star. Guys, our last guy, not a lot of you might know him. Many are scared of him. Mike. I don't have a middle run. I was like, what do I say about Mike? But I mean, that's as best as we can get. Mike, that's gold. That's also gold. He's hippie there and he's dressed up on the other thing. But I tell you, during the week, he's a danger man as well. So Mike, you come up and...
Can I just say that's AI? That's not me. Okay, so I've been asked to share my story so far. I'm 39, and yeah, it's been a journey. I'm not going to get into all the ins and outs of everything, but I would like to paint a picture as to where I'm coming from. So I was actually born into the kingdom, the United Kingdom, into a very loving home, a good family. You know, I honestly believe my parents did the best they could with the knowledge they had. It wasn't a Christian home, and I grew up complete atheist. I didn't get it. Honestly, I thought you guys were weird. I've still got my reservations about a few. But, you know, I persecuted, I teased, I ridiculed any Christians that I knew. I just didn't get it. I wasn't there. I grew up, I embraced the wrong crowds. I embraced labels that were put on me from young. I was labeled the naughty one, wicked personality, mischievous, all these things. And I loved it, you know. It fed my, like, I was prideful about those things, you know. It fed my ego, and I really liked that. It gave me a sense of belonging, of purpose, and identity. So I played on that. Going into my mid-teens, I was in a rough school, got suspended lots. And I think that's where I started to spiral. The next 7 years or so, going into my early 20s, I was just blagging my way through life. Big porkies, just gift of the gab, life of a lie, addicted to the world, everything in it, smoking naughty things and borderline alcoholic, going out most nights, not even knowing if I'd driven my car home. Like, it was bad. I was dangerous. Shoplifting, got into football violence, and it got me into trouble, behind bars and jail cells many times, for possession of drugs, to drink driving. I was banned, took my license, and one day things got pretty bad. So I went out on a Saturday night. What do you guys say? I went on a jol. Is that right? A jol, a bender. And I was woken up on a Sunday morning by two police officers in my bedroom next to my mum, arresting me for something in the moment I didn't know that I had done, getting into a pretty serious bar fight. And they handcuffed me in my bedroom and they took me away. They told me the good news was that I would be looking at a minimum of 4 years in prison for this. Now, I was in and out of court for a year on bail. And every time a police car came down the road, I would think, this is it, I'll put my shoes on. And in that time, I went numb. I didn't care anymore. I was bland. I had no hope whatsoever. I'd settled in my heart, this is what's going to happen. Calculated, I'll be 25 when I come out. Let's get on with it. The day of my court case came, a year later, and my lawyer rang me and said, Michael, I'm not coming with you today. They're going to drop the charges with a lack of evidence. Boy, did I hit the town. I didn't deserve that. After this happened, I decided I'm going to flee. I'm going to run. So I got a job on a cruise ship, go to America as a trainer. The problem was I was out boozing again, and I failed the medical. So they banned me from the United States for 5 years. So I had to find an alternate route. Then I found this place called South Africa. Voila. There was a World Cup happening in 2010, and I left my home, my family, and I came here. Almost like the American dream, you know, the SA version, the Johannesburg dream. Wrong crowd, right? So here I am, and the thing is, I thought changing my surroundings would fix everything, but they weren't really the problem. This was. I was the problem, and guess what? I was here too. So I kept living like a rascal. Life kept being the way it was, jumping the border to be valid with my visa. And you guys get the gist. This is where I'm coming from. 2011, what am I like then? 23, something like that. Things changed. I had a radical encounter. And I say radical by the ramifications of the encounter. So I went out with a friend for a cup of tea. Imagine that, right? And that friend brought to the restaurant that day a book, a Christian book. Now, they went to the bathroom, and I thought to myself, honestly, what's this rubbish, like this nonsense? Like, what could a book teach me, you know? I picked it up, opened it up, and I read about this much. It wasn't a lot, 3-4 lines. I didn't know what I read, I didn't get it, I didn't understand it, but something in me came alive that day. It gave me hope. Now, I'm not here to sell a book. It's not about the book, it's about the Lord working through it. My friend came back and I asked, do you mind if I borrow this book? They gave me a whole bunch. And I went on a mission that day. I didn't realize, looking back, what I was actually doing, but I was going to go and pursue the Lord in my secret place. At the time, I'm just reading a whole bunch of books. And I made a decision. I realized something. God's real. Jesus, like, properly did rise from the dead, legit. Maybe you ain't so weird after all. Like, let me in, you know? Just for the, so this is where everything for me begins. And just for the record, I've been married now nearly 14 years to that friend who gave me that book. That was my wife. She's amazing. I sometimes joke, like, you have any more books? So Michael gets saved, the angels rejoice, and this thing's real to me. Do you know what I mean? This thing's real to me. The thing was, I thought I was the only one with the Holy Spirit. I didn't realize there's more of us. So I'm out there trying to save the world, jumping out my car, like praying for everybody, following people around. Like I was, let me say, I had zeal from the go. I had no knowledge. I wasn't grounded. I was a loose cannon out there. I had no community. And I told all my clients from all different religions about Jesus, and I lost them all. And I started to, over time, just spend more time with him, getting into the word more. My lifestyle started to change. Get into his word daily. My language started to change. You might not believe it, but I had the mouth of a sailor. A saved one, just in case you're a sailor, like an unsaved sailor. Don't offend anyone. And you see, I started to share with people the changes that I was experiencing. Because I'm not ashamed of my past. I'm not proud of it. But that wasn't me. That was someone who had no idea who they were. But now I know who I am. My eyes are open. And from this moment, now I could see. And can I just say that we all have a story. And we can never afford to disqualify ourselves from sharing ours because we don't think we have one. You do. And I think our stories are more powerful than what we sometimes give credit. 2020, we came to Cape Town. And we came to Josh Jen. I want to say this, and I mean this statement genuinely. I've experienced more growth spiritually in the 3 years that I've been part of this church, plugged in, surrounded by solid elders, good, like strong leaders, the culture of this place, the community aspect, than the previous 10 running out there, Lone Ranger, loose cannon, church to church. And I really mean that. So fast forward, where are we now? 2025, honestly, I feel like I'm only just getting started, taking off. Understanding what it means to be part of a wholesome, healthy church. Like I say, strong culture, community. And I'm excited for what's next. I don't know what's next, but that's my story. It's not done. I know I'm so young. And I feel like I'm only halfway through it. I just don't know the next bit yet.
So we're going to just give you, just choose one. Choose one.
I'll mix it up. Let me go for number 4. What's one thing I learned on my journey that I wish I'd tell my younger self? Jeepers. I would have told myself the gospel. I would have shared my story, and I would have shared my story with myself, but I probably wouldn't have listened. So What I would have shared with myself when I got saved is get plugged into a local church. Get straight into a community. Position yourselves around your elders, around your leaders, in the body. Connect with one another. And don't waste your times, your coffee times. I wish I knew that, man. Like, be vulnerable, accountable. Take this thing deeper. You know?